Welcome to the Drop the Mic podcast. I am Darren Jenkins, your host. And on today's show, this is kind of a little bit of a nerd treat for me. Todd Haberkorn, who is a Los Angeles-based actor with over 600 professional credits spanning stage and film and to animation and video games. If you're a gamer, you know who this person is. If you've watched anime, if you watch animation, if you've watched cartoons, you know who this gentleman is. Todd, thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. Nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you as well. I'm just going to tell you my first impression of something that was really hilarious. So I got your profile and I was like, all right, let me go to his IMDb. Let's give it a quick check, see what he's done. And I'm like, it felt like 30 minutes to scroll to the bottom of your IMDb. And it was not like just little names. I mean, they're massive franchise chain, like platforms that you've been the voice of. And man, I've always wanted to have this conversation because I find what voiceover artists do so interesting. And so I think up until maybe about, I'd say maybe 20 years ago at least, when people in voiceover really started to get the credit they deserved for some of the work that you guys have done. Because, you know, we're very visual species, so we tend to latch on to the visual pieces of content, not really paying attention to like some of the voices. But the voices really make the content. They really bring these characters to life. So I'm starting off with this. When did you become this person that you wanted to do voiceovers? Like, when did that start to transpire?
For me, I didn't know that VO actually was a thing ever growing up. I thought I really thought that these characters, even cartoons, were like, you know what? They're somewhere and they come out and they go to set and they do their thing. Cause I was a stage guy and an on-camera guy, but I just didn't connect that. Oh no, there are people that go and just do the voice behind the mic and then it gets animated and they work with the writers and such. So I never thought of it as an option because of that, number one. But then number two is I was made fun of a lot for my voice as a kid. And so you really, especially in those formative years, you start to think like, oh, well, my voice kind of sucks and that's how that's going to be for the rest of my life. And so I never, ever thought that was something that was ever going to be in the realm of possibility for me. So I just focused on camera. And for me, when I was working in Texas professionally in the on-camera world, it was tricky because casting directors would say that they don't know what to do with my look. And this was a different time. This was before we had a more, I feel like there's always been diversity in some form. There really, right. And this is, you know, me speaking from the Asian perspective. There have been movies that and television shows that have featured every walk of life. So I think sometimes in our movement to get more awareness on more diversity, I think sometimes we forget that it has been there, just not as much as I think to the liking of some people. But for me, it was hard to get cast and stuff on camera. And so when voiceover came along on a whim, I was like, well, let's go try it and see what happens. And then they didn't hate it. And they let me, they didn't kick me out of the studio. And so I was like, let's keep going. And so some years pass, many years pass, and I've been, I had the momentum of VO behind me. And I was like, well, let's try it in LA, years and years ago. And when I moved to LA, I was like, I'm going to go to LA and I'm going to be one of those actors that's like on camera and voiceover. And at this point, VO had been my primary thing for many years. But I was like, I'm going to do both because I see actors that do both. And sure enough, I ran into more casting directors that were like, we don't know what to do with your look. Or they're like, you don't have blonde hair and blue eyes. And they literally pulled out a chart and they go, this chart is where the look we're looking for is going to fit based on our numbers in this commercial. And so I'm like, well, I guess that's not for me then. But I didn't give up. What I did was, and Darren, forgive my little aside here. I didn't give up. But what I did was I think sometimes in the industry, we're told you can do whatever you want to do and you can be whatever you want to be. And I think layers of that have some truth.
Right.
But I think it's also important to hone in on what your strengths are as a performer or what you bring to the table and focus on those. So I could have said, well, damn it, I'm going to keep going to every casting director till I find the one that is right. Or I could say, you know what? The voiceover world has been welcoming me with open arms. Let me invest more time into that. Hmm. Because if you look at a film, they don't live by that adage of you can be whatever you want to be. Because if you look at Shazam Part 2, just pulling a movie out of recent events, if they believed you can be whatever you want to be, they would continue to push Shazam and say, we don't care about the numbers. We're going to make Part 3 and that's
right,
it.
Right.
Instead, they go, ooh, people aren't liking Shazam Part 2. Let's send it to VOD right now, 3 weeks after its release, and just try something else. So businesses do that. They adjust and they change based on the feedback they're getting. And I think that there's got to be a healthy balance. And I you'll see in this discussion, I would imagine that I am very much try to be in line with balance.
Right.
And so you need a balance of the confidence to do the things you love, but then also the confidence to understand that if that's not where the industry wants you, you may need to pivot or come back another time. That's what I've tried to do. And from my journey, that's what seems to have worked. So we'll see.
Well, wow. There's a few things unpacked there and I never thought of it that way. And you're right. But, you know, I know a few voiceover people. Actually, I hosted a networking event for film people a couple weeks ago. And there was one brother who came to the event who told me he was a voiceover. And to be quite frank, that was the first time I've met face-to-face someone of color who is doing voiceover. I kid you not. And I know other voiceover people, and this is not to say that they're not good or any of those things. I love those people. They know my heart is with them. But it was the first time I'd actually met somebody of color who did voiceovers. Not saying they're not out there, but I feel like that's kind of that's far and few between in a lot of ways. And I actually know somebody you probably know quite well, Sarah Nalachini.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so as I, you know, have done over 300 events and networking with all different people in the industry, the fact that I've only met one person, black person who does voiceover is weird, even though I know specifically that for certain that there are black voiceover artists. I just never seen them. It's almost like, you know, a Yeti or something to me.
Well, you know, you've got Bill Butts who is tearing it up in anime. You got Zeno Robinson who does a lot of VO work. Back in the day, I mean, James Earl Jones started Vader in the 70s. You had Brock Peters doing the Star Wars NPR radio dramas. There have been people, and I think that it's tricky because there are so many different forms of entertainment that you can't possibly know and see all the different forms that are out there. And so it's easy to, for me to, because our reality is our perspective, that right. that's what we have to work with. Right. And so, yeah, it's cool that you ran into the Yeti that you, that you were looking for. But yeah, no, I, yeah, when I was in college, I was the only Asian kid in the entire program all 4 years. And for me though, I never thought of it as a, for me, I'm first gen immigrant family in America, but I never thought about my race or ethnicity because, I was just like, no, I'm going to do whatever it takes just because I'm a human being right, in a way. Right, right. And so it's weird because I saw my mother do that. Like she was a very small 4'10" Asian woman in a really kind of male heavy, medical field.
Right.
But she never looked at it like it's because I'm Asian, I'm not getting further or whatever. But I know that those hurdles were there. It's just, we never thought of it that way. Even when I was getting, it's so weird. Even when I was told, we don't know what to do with your look, right. I still was like, well, I need to try a different door. But so it's when I'm casting, I almost run into, I think sometimes I run into a little bit of pushback in the sense that I'm looking for the best human, the best right. performer when I'm casting. But right. there are times when we have those conversations with the creative team where I have to go beyond casting the best human and cast for specific right. Things.
Right.
And so it's an interesting dynamic to walk for myself because as someone who whose family is not from here, I also try to understand that the goal of the projects that I try to work on is to have the most effective storytelling. And so I try to cast effectively right. in line with that storytelling. So right. it's, you know, it's such a dangerous, like potentially dangerous minefield that has to be navigated, while at the same time, I'm in that minefield as someone whose family is not from here. And right. so it's such a wacky, wild ride that, I'm just happy to be on the coaster, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I say that to all, I say people all the time, like, and you know, the chart that you were shown, I think I've seen that same chart because I've been in this, I was like, as you're saying it, I was like, wow, I feel like I was in the same room because the same exact thing has happened to me before. But also to your same point, be honest, when I started as an actor, I wasn't going out there to be the best Black actor. I was going out there to be the best actor.
Sure.
I was trying to go, I wanted to get great roles. I wasn't trying to find the great Black roles or it, like race never really wasn't. I mean, maybe it's a little naive or I just, at that point, it wasn't something that was on my mind. I wasn't thinking on that level. It wasn't, even when I got rejected, I didn't go, well, this must be because I'm Black. I never thought about that. I just wanted to do what I loved doing. And I think to your point, yeah, at some point though, it doesn't come about whether you're running up against a race wall. It just becomes is this something that I'm meant to do? And if not, maybe I need to think about pivoting into something that is going to give me a better access to where I want to go. Especially in Hollywood, I think the route to where you want to go isn't always straight. It's sometimes curves. It's sometimes twists. And you have to make a change or make an adjustment to get around a hurdle to get to where you want to go. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think wherever you need to go to be happy, that's what you should try to do. And, you know.
Yeah. And I think there are paths that there are obviously there are options. Everyone's playing one big old game of Grand Theft Auto where you can choose the different. You can choose if you want to steal a car right now. You could. There are consequences.
Right.
You could go break into that building if you want, or you could do the mission objective. And so it just depends on what every what each individual thinks the best use of their time is. And for me, how I figure that out for myself, speaking to what you were mentioning, is I just think about what my goals are, what my sustainable goals are, and is this action the way to get to it, or is this action the way to get to it, or does that goal need, you know, does that goal need to change based on hurdles that you're facing, you know? So I think that's a great way to approach it. Your mindset sounds very good for being adaptable and, and being available to adjust to whatever comes to the door.
I got a test. I had a test, one of those Myers-Briggs or whatever one of the tests. And that's exactly what they told me. I'm like, my strength is situational adaptability. And so,
that's a resume builder right there. That's good.
Just to I want to rewind a little bit here and go back to the start of your career as in voiceover, right? How do you even become because I feel like if you're an actor, there are casting calls and there are listings and places where you can find jobs and opportunities for that. But voiceover seems to me a very specific thing, and it's very it's not a straight line into the field and finding opportunities. How did you, once you kind of decided this is something I would like to pursue, how did you go about doing it? Is there a class you have to take, or what?
For me, it was a very, advantageous situation where in Texas, Funimation, which is now Crunchyroll, part of Crunchyroll, they were a one-stop shop for any of the VO in town. So in Dallas, if you wanted to work in cartoons in that market, that's where you went. And so for me, when I went there, it was a snowball effect. So once I started working there, it became one session turned into three sessions, turned into five, turned into all day, turned into all week. And so that is what was I cut my teeth on for many, many years. In fact, I was told they used to, speaking of charts, they used to have a chart where they charted how long and how many sessions each actor, and it was all broken down, how long each actor was in the booth on a show on any particular property. And it turns out for 5 years running, I was the number one voice actor in terms of hours behind the mic out of male, female, whatever, across the board in the studio. So that was awesome. That was a cool stat. I was grateful to hear that. And I think beyond that, it was getting an agent, of course. And then once you move to LA, at this time when I moved to LA many years ago, anime was not the hot ticket it is now.
Right.
Now Dragon Ball Z has co-pros with Swatch, and you know, they've got Nike and or Adidas and all this stuff, and you see them in Times Square. That was never even a possibility back then. In fact, when you came to LA, if they knew you did anime, they were like, oh, well, okay, right. He's C-string. So I essentially had to start completely over.
Oh, wow.
And then all the anime I had done would not come into play until, actually, speaking of curves and such, until years later, when I would start working on video games, and the people writing the video games and making the video games were like, I loved you in this anime. I loved watching you in this. Like Destiny 2, for example, the writer based that character on me before I even knew that was I was going to be that character.
Really?
And so I was like, all right, that's pretty cool. So
that is cool.
I'm grateful for those moments. And I just try to be prepared for any of those situations by arming myself with my little utility belt of gratitude and feeling fortunate to be in those situations, because the thing about it is there is a lot of voiceover work to be done, but the downside is that it makes you pretty replaceable. Only in that top echelon are you not replaceable. Like, for example, with Futurama, when they're like, oh, that became a huge news story about replacing that cast. But at the end of the day, that cast won out. But that's a rare occurrence. So many times we're replaceable just because the nature of the deadlines, and we got to get stuff done, and there's certain budgets. And if this actor doesn't want to play ball at this rate, well, we're going to find someone who sounds like him. I was just doing an audition today where they're looking for sound alikes, because my suspicion is they couldn't work out the contracts. And so it's an interesting existence, because on one hand, you're working on these video games and shows that change people's lives. I go all over the world, and folks come up to me and tell me how this show or this game saved their life, literally in the hospital watching this show. And then you come back home and you might be replaced on a game.
Right.
And so it's such a weird existence that if you're hitching your star on your worth on your gigs and your career, you're going to go crazy, because you can't control the fickleness of the industry, the fickleness of fandom. So why would you hitch all of your worth onto something you have the least control over? So that's why I hitch my worth to other things in life, to my gratitude, because I can control my gratitude. Right. I hitch it to family and friends that mean a lot to me, where the work is I've taken the shiny gloss off of it. I think so many people think, I'd give my left arm to be in voiceover. And once you realize that this industry is like every other industry structurally, hopefully it helps you take a little bit of the sheen off of it and realize that you don't need to sacrifice your firstborn to make it in the business, and that's okay.
With, you know, that actually brings up a question I had for you. A friend of mine is out of work, and he's been online on LinkedIn, kind of posting like these articles talking about different types of content and such. But one article he posted was about artificial intelligence, and, you know, kind of telling people, you know, slow down a little bit, because, you know, this is kind of like an important moment that we're at in society with AI. And it made me start to think about, because I started seeing like these videos of the deep fakes and all these different things. And then it made me start thinking about the voiceover people, because now they've got software and algorithms that can duplicate people's voices. And I'm wondering if there is any conversation being had in the voiceover world around this potential. I see it as a disaster, to be honest, because I think you can't replace live people when it comes to voiceover.
Yeah, absolutely. That discussion is happening on all levels of the VO community, from contractual discussions to union discussions. And some studios have stepped up and said, we're totally with you. We are not going to even touch AI. There are other studios that aren't like that. And my hope is that awareness, the amount of awareness is there, and the amount of empathy is there to understand that just because here's a perfect example. One time, Shinola, the watch company, and they make bags and stuff, they're out of Detroit. I went to their factory because a friend of mine who's in audio, she loves Detroit and she loves Shinola. And so we went and we got a tour with the CEO of the company, and he walked us around and was showing us, and he made a very good point that I will always remember. He said, these jobs, we could absolutely outsource and it would save us money, but we don't, because I want to keep jobs here because I want these people to be able to support their families and to like coming to work. And they made that choice and it still didn't affect their bottom line. Mm-hmm. And so I have to hope that empathy kicks in and the studios realize that they could, just because they can do something doesn't mean they necessarily should. It's like, for example, because ultimately it's bad for them. For example, I'm a grown man. I could eat cake at every meal if I wanted to. It's not good for me, but I could do it. Yeah. But just because I can doesn't mean I should. Yeah. And so hopefully that mentality kicks in for them and that they understand that once you go down that path, it's very hard to get out of the weeds.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite saying. I say that all the time. It just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah,
I should get t-shirts printed up and sell them on my website. I mean, I feel that's very important. Yeah. And I hope studios understand that as well, because I just feel like it would just be a huge mistake. I mean, and you know, it's like when something like when you, especially nowadays, like I feel like we're at an all-time great moment for animation and for animators and voiceover, because there's so much great talent being developed now and a lot of good artists that are coming out of the schools. And I feel hopefully that we'll see more animated projects, more gaming projects that come, and that in turn will spur on obviously more work for the industry and more money, whatever. So I hope they don't mess that up. I think, yeah, you know, because that's a very delicate ecosystem to me.
Yeah.
I was looking back at like your earlier career, and it's funny, your IMDb kind of speaks, like you can see the jump in like I can see somewhere around 2000, things just took off for you. Like you were just doing like all this work. I mean, you were doing big names like Sailor Moon. And I was just like, I would love to have been there at the moment you booked this gig, because even then Sailor Moon was a pretty big name in the industry. How did it feel to kind of start doing, like you're on all these big name brand projects? I mean, just looking at your list of work, is I think any one person, you've done more than any one person I could. I'm like, how are you finding all the time to do all these projects?
Well, what's interesting about IMDb is it doesn't include any of the stage work or any audiobooks. And so,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Audiobooks, there's over 100 there. And then how do I find the time? Well, early on, I did not have a work-life balance. And so the gain of all those gigs and credits, the fuel for that was my personal life, was not being kind to myself, to not having that balance. That was the cost. And so when I got to a certain place in life, I realized that that was not sustainable, because at the end of the day, I was going to be alone. And so if friends or family or loved ones, I was just going to be alone if I kept going that way. And also, I feel like at the end of the day, when you're on your deathbed, which we will all be at some point, nobody is ever going to say, man, I wish I had worked more. I wish I had answered one more email. We're not going to be like that. And so I'm just thankful that I realized that sooner than my deathbed. So although it was awesome to be on the receiving end of all those experiences, I think it was a good learning lesson for me to remember that you can't, there's a ceiling to that. Like you see people that have massive success and then they've killed themselves.
Yeah.
And you're like, why did, how, You were on top of the Chris Cornell. You were Soundgarden. You were on top of the world. What's going on? So I think what that tells us is that putting all your eggs in the success basket of career is not necessarily the answer, maybe. Mm. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So with that said, what are some ways that you're kind of keeping balance now? Like what are some, like if there's a younger you, who, how would you like, you know, give this person some advice?
I mean, I set boundaries. So when I'm working with a client, I professionally just say, you know, if they send an email on a weekend or after hours, I'll get back to them the next day. And sometimes they're like, hey, I sent you an email at, you know, Saturday night. What happened? And I'm like, well, I spent time with my family at that point. I'm not mean about it, but I just set those boundaries and set those rules.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, maybe 8 times out of 10, it's the response is great. Right. Now, just because I set boundaries doesn't mean the people that I'm working with have those boundaries or that they like other people having boundaries. Right. And I've definitely encountered that. I have encountered that. And it costs me in the sense that our sensibilities about work are not aligned. And therefore we probably end up parting ways. But ultimately I think I wouldn't want to do that anyway. So right. It's probably, as you were saying earlier, this curve, adjusting to this curve was probably better for me. So I do it that way. I also prioritize time with my wife. And we have a relatively new marriage that we're in. And so spending time with her and getting fulfilled that way is also a really big motivator to maintain this balance. And then also realizing that I see so many people around me that don't. And they're unhealthy in a lot of ways. They're unhealthy physically. They're unhealthy mentally. They're sleep deprived. And yeah, they're walking around with a Gucci backpack. Cool. But that backpack is resting on an aching back on a person that hasn't eaten in, you know, 18 hours and hasn't slept but 3 hours in the past week. So, you know, I look at that as a good learning example and be like, all right, let's keep that in mind. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I can understand. Like, it was funny. I was talking to a friend of mine who does voiceovers and we were laughing because she also, I mean, she obviously does acting and she does voiceovers and stuff. And we were laughing one time because she sent me a note one day. She was going to be on a Saturday Night Live. And as a background player, and she was like, no, she's like, the funny thing about it is I can be on Saturday Night Live and nobody will recognize who I am. But if I'm at a store and I say some certain lines, people will recognize my voice before they recognize my face. And she's like, I'm not sure how to take that. I go, well, if you become super famous, then you can go out and nobody will know who you are unless you talk, right? You can just be out. Do you find that people recognize? Because I'll tell you straight up, I was on your website and I'm like, I know this guy. I've seen his face on things before. And that struck me as weird, considering that you've been more prolific in your voiceover. So I'm still trying to figure out where I've seen you before. I don't know. I know I've seen you in something. What's it like when you go to because I saw your schedule. You're doing a lot of cons. Is it weird that people recognize you on that level?
No, I've been I get recognized in the most unexpected places. Like, I'll be at Best Buy and cashier comes up to me and recognizes me, or I'll be at Disneyland and I'll hear someone call my name from off to the side, or they'll hear my they'll so I'm checking out somewhere and they'll ask for my name. and they'll see my name and they'll go, I know you, or, you know, so it's happened at the oddest places. With conventions, I don't find it weird for me. What it is reaffirming that what we do matters to people, because that's where I hear all these stories about how these games and shows have helped people. And it's their time. It's their, a lot of times it's people meeting me for the first time. And it's something that I try to keep in mind, that they will meet me and they'll remember that forever. So you better be in line with that. You better recognize the importance of that. Because I know that with celebrities that I've met, I will, all, even if it was for 30 seconds, I remember it forever. Right. I was thinking about Nicolas Cage. I was at one of his film premieres sitting next to him. And I went up to him nervous. It's only a couple of years ago. I went up to him nervous and I met him. And it was just a quick, pleasant exchange. We talked for a minute or whatever. For him, he'll probably never remember that again, but I will always remember that. So I try to keep that in mind when people are meeting me, if that's the case for them.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've met a few different individuals, and for the most part, I would say all of them have been very super nice, just sweet, sweet people. But you're right. It is like, you never, like, when you're making that kind of an impact on people, you don't know how important it is to that person. So, and you know, I'm the kind of person who is always like, treat people as you'd want them to treat you.
And, sure.
You know, so I'd want you to always treat me nice. So I'm going, you know.
I think that extends to the work-life balance you were talking about earlier, in the sense that if you're putting yourself through the gauntlet, with long nights and arduous work schedule, would you do that to your best friend?
Right.
And if the answer is no, then why are you doing it to yourself?
Okay. That's a good point. And I find, you know what, that's, I was just watching some show, they were a news program, and they were talking about body dysmorphia. And like all these, like these actors in Hollywood who are, bodybuilding beyond what they should be trying to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's not just, you know, that is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, seriously, because that goes on not just bodybuilding, but all types of other like things. I think, the one thing I do like about this current time we're in is that seeking self-help, being more mindful of your personal health, mental and physical, is, I think, much more recognized today than it's been in the past, and especially in Hollywood, where, you know, we've unfortunately seen a lot of celebrities and personalities pass away in results of them pushing themselves too hard, too fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that what you're doing for yourself by creating these boundaries is far smarter thing for your career than trying to do more, more, more. Like you said, we don't have that much time on Earth. Let's not spend it so stressfully. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Enjoy what you're doing. You know what you do is impressive. And one question I had for you was, as a creator, you're doing multiple types of things. Is there something that you haven't done yet that you were like, you know, that would be interesting to do. I would love to do this. Like, I know you, because I know you produce, I know you direct, I know you act. Is there anything that you would like to say, try before, you know?
Well, I've adapted a lot. I've written scripts. I have adapted scripts for shows. I have, especially as a director with live action dubs and anime and video games, writing is part of it. But for me, a challenge that I have right now is finding a way to defeat the beast of procrastination in getting more of my scripts written. I just get so caught up in other adventures throughout the day that I, even when I'm like, you know what I need to do, is I need to set smaller attainable goals is what I need to do. Cause it's, as we all run into it, it's like, oh, well, if I can't write 100 pages today, I won't do any. And it's like, that doesn't make sense, but that's what we tell ourselves. And so I would say that in the writing vein, I want to get more confident in the more confidence in believing in my ideas. Cause I've, just because I don't, how I operate for me is, I think some people, I don't have a problem being a self-starter, but I think sometimes people have, a very healthy self-image and healthy confidence. I am confident in things that I do, but I feel like it takes a certain amount of not ego is a bad word, but a certain amount of ego to think that out of all the things being written or all the things being produced, that we need to see yours or hear yours or look at yours. Right. And so I think there's a little bit of that's lacking in my DNA right now when I'm trying to get these things accomplished. But, I need to look at that again and reanalyze.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the same mindset. I've been working on the same screenplay for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I am same way. I will go, well, if I can't write 10 pages a day, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just, yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Seriously, dude?
Yeah.
So I, to your point, I kind of started recently, just very recently, setting smaller goals for myself, saying, like, all right, just write a paragraph today and start there, or just write anything. Just anything, just so that way you have something down on paper. And it helps a little bit because it helps kind of get my creative juices flowing a little bit more.
Yeah.
But definitely it does help to kind of set the goals within like plausible reach, I guess, if that's a,
yeah.
Destiny 2 Lightfall is coming out. What can you tell us about this?
Destiny 2, that latest DLC, yeah, just recently came out, and it's it's a continuation of this beautiful world that the writers over at Bungie have crafted, and this very layered adventure with all sorts of different characters, and I've been in the mix with them for many years now. And have been blown away by the continued imagination that they pull from and the stories that they explore. And I hope people continue to love the franchise as much as I've loved working on it. Because working on the IP is some of the most memorable session time that I get to have, is when I get to work on that project. So I look forward to more. And I look forward to seeing what people think about more when they check it out. Available on all the next gen systems, so except the Switch. I don't think it's on the Switch, but yeah, anything else?
How long does it take to do like a complete a game that you're putting a voice over to? Like, how many hours do you generally have to put forth for this character?
Well, you know, it really just depends on the story load, okay, on how much that character is featured and what types of dialogue they have. If it's direct dialogue or if it's call outs or if it's something that you'll hear over a radio, all of that just depends and how it's integrated into the game. But the thing is with VO that people don't get to see, which they shouldn't. I mean, the magic trick is you see it when it's all done.
Right.
But you don't need to see the magicians working hours and hours and hours with coins and with bunnies and to try to figure it out. Like that part, I almost like how I feel like there was a time when we were really, really, really heavy into behind the scenes footage when DVDs first came out and they needed ideas for extra features. And we were really into seeing the process. And it demystified it in a way to where people maybe it took some of the, it's like when you, like referencing Disneyland earlier, I don't need to see where you buy the trash cans for Disneyland and who decides where they go. I just like to walk around and go like, wow, there's a trash can like every 10 feet. Cool. And it's got the little logo on it. Like, keep some of that magic for me. So there's so many different aspects to the production, from the writing to the legal team, to the engineers, to the sound design team, to the directing, to the producers, to the game developers, to the casting, that it's a multi-headed Hydra that has to play nice in the Hydra Zoo to get to the finish line. And it's so awesome when it's done well. And I'm glad that I've been on the receiving end of several of a lot of well done games. So I hope that continues.
Well, I mean, you've done so many, and I think the list of projects you've worked on, a number of things that you've done, speaks to the quality and how much people enjoy you as a person of on these projects. And is there a character that you haven't played that you always kind of thought, you know, that'd be kind of interesting, I wouldn't mind trying to...
Well, I am a big comic book guy. So
me too.
I would love to, I've auditioned so many times for so many different things in the Batman universe. So many things. I've directed a DC game that had Batman and Superboy in it and Superman, but I want to be in that world. So I would love to dive into that. And I don't know if, I would love to play Batman, but I think it's a very particular Batman it would have to be. I can do Conroy. Mm-hmm. I just did it for a project yesterday as a spec thing for something. But like the Joker would be nice, or like Nightwing, something like that, something in the realm. So fingers crossed one day, who knows?
I could see you playing a Riddler.
Oh, Riddler would be great. Yeah, Riddler would be nice.
I think that would be really nice.
Yeah, I'm down for it all.
One last thing I would ask you before. If there are people out there trying to get into voiceover, and there are, I know for sure that people will be listening to this. What would be one piece of advice you'd give them in the pursuit of becoming, doing voiceover, whether it was for, you know, games or animation?
I would say one thing that would be really, really helpful in their toolbox, two items, is patience, but then also an accurate and realistic self-awareness about what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. Really hone in on that, because in this part of the industry, it's hard to give a checklist of advice, because everyone's story, as you mentioned, is so different, right, of how they get into it. But knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at is so important, because that can make the difference of whether or not someone calls you in again. If they send you an audition and you think you're good for all the roles, and you send in an audition for all the roles, but you really should have just sent in an audition for one of them, they're going to listen to the ones that you didn't have a strong read on and think that's your capability. So have a good awareness about your strengths, I would say.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. That's because it is some people's natural inclination to think, well, I'll just send in for everything and they'll have to pick me for something.
Yeah.
But if not, like, I know directors, they don't always listen to everything. And they, you know, if they're busy or they're trying to get something right quickly, if they listen to your worst thing that you sent in, that's all they're going to know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I do try to listen to everything, but it is hard. There are times when I can't. Like this show I'm directing right now, when we were initially casting it, I listened to around 750 different auditions.
Yikes.
I know in the first 5 seconds whether or not I need to invest time into your full audition. Right. But if I hear that your worst thing first, then yeah, I'm already going to think like, okay, I've heard three of their, you know, maybe their fifth was their best one, but it's like, well, I've heard three or four of your worst, so why should I invest in the fifth one? So right. Yeah, it absolutely.
Wow. Wow. That's a great piece of advice. Actually, I don't think people hear that enough. I think that's true with you as an actor with your headshots as well. I think make sure you like seriously, like, I guess if you're in the business of trying to be on the screen, whether or behind the screen as a voiceover, really care for you what you're doing. Really pay attention to what you're doing. And to your point, understand what you are good at and versus what you are not good at. And because your chances are very, it's like trying to, someone said to me one day, being in Hollywood as an actor is like trying to shoot a bullet through like a keyhole in a door that's only 3 inches wide.
Yeah.
Like sometimes your chance, like you have a very limited amount of opportunity. So you need to be good when you're there. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
This was great. Full transparency, I'm a comic book person as well. I used to be a comic book artist.
Oh, right on. Okay.
And so my experience with gamers and animation people are mostly from the finished product end of things. I very rarely get to talk to voiceover people. And I love voiceover people because I've always wanted to do voiceover. I'm a nerd. That's just who I am. And at some point, you know, maybe I'll try it one day, but I having this conversation with you was like amazing. What's next for you? What are you working on? Can you tell us about anything you're working on next?
Continuing production on this animated series that I'm directing. It's based on the Hello Neighbor video game series. Mm. So working on that. And then there are some really cool things coming from, speaking of comic books, one of the major producers of comic books has a thing coming that will be fun to talk about. So
he's like, I'm not saying, yeah, but I'm saying
that'll be a lot of fun when it hits. Cause that's going to be something that, it was really, fun for me to experience as a kid. So there's stuff coming awesome. that is on its way. Yeah.
And so people can follow you on Instagram at the official _ Habergram. By the way, when I went to your website, and people can check out his web, I love this. the habitat. I am so jealous.
Seriously. Well, thank you for checking it out.
Definitely check out Destiny 2 Lightfall when it's coming out. It's out already, right?
Just came out.
If you've got you've got the major gaming systems, have at it. I just got rid of my PlayStation like last year. I so regret it.
I've got to give it some time. I it's staring at me, so I need to get to work on my backlog of games.
Well, thank you for being on the show today. This was wonderful. You're welcome to come back anytime else to share whatever new project you're working on. And hopefully somebody at one of the comic book companies will say, hey, he should be one of the characters in this. He should be. So if you're listening. Well,
that's right. That's right. Call me up. Thank you for the digital hospitality. And it was a pleasure meeting and chatting with you.
You're welcome. Anytime. And for those of you, please make sure you like and follow, subscribe us on Instagram, where you can find me at the Darren Jenkins. Todd, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Come back anytime.
Thank you, good sir. Thank you.
That wraps it up for the Drop the Mic podcast. I'm Darren Jenkins. We'll talk to you next time.